Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, how you doing? And welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. And on behalf of the entire Kelly Alexander Show team, we wish you a very happy new year and all the best for the months ahead. We hope they're filled with happiness, health, and success for you and your family and friends. This week on the show, we actually take a look back at some of our favorite interviews and segments from the last year. We had such an amazing time covering these topics and stories that we want to revisit them again. Enjoy the show, and again, thank you so much for your continued support. We really appreciate it.
Capture your need for sound.
Joining us on the show are a well-known Toronto radio morning team who have moved their talents to the online world, hosting humbleandfredradio.com. Fellas, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, we're Humble and Fred. Welcoming to be nice to be welcomed.
So, guys, you know, we have a lot of listeners, who are tuning in right now overseas. So for those who don't know about you, can you sort of please explain how you guys actually came together to work as a team, you know, doing morning radio?
Well, this is Fred speaking. Back in the 80s, I worked for a radio station called CFNY, which is now The Edge in Toronto, 102.1. And I had been there several years as a sportscaster. And then it sort of moved into the co-hosting capacity. There were some changes at the station, and the program director at the time, Mr. Danny Kingsbury, had an idea for a morning show featuring Howard, who he had known from out west, out in Moose Jaw and what have you, and me. So he put Howard and I together. We met one day, felt like, there was some chemistry there, and the Humble and Fred Show was born in 1989.
Well, Kelly, Howard here, that's one version of the story. The real version is I was kidnapped by gypsies, and this monkey took me in.
Fantastic. Got it. I love it. And did you guys know right away, I know that Fred mentioned there was some chemistry right away, but did you have any inkling, you know, in your hearts that this was going to go on for years and years and years?
Well, when I first met him, I was hoping we would kiss. But it didn't happen. You're sicking me.
You know what? I don't know. You know, we both have the same sensibilities. We have a similar sense of humor. We laugh at the same silly things. And that started on, you know, pretty much the first day and has continued to this day today.
And
no, but at the time, you never know. Radio is quite volatile. But the thing is, CFNY or The Edge was a new rock station. And it was a good fit, the format of the radio station and the type of morning show we did. So it just went on for an extended period of time.
And was it an interesting evolution for you, you know, career-wise, as you moved from, you know, station to station sort of around that FM dial?
You know, I don't even like to think about it because we were at The Edge and we're doing fine. And then the company asked us if we'd like to try a project on the AM dial called Mojo Radio. You know, I was well into my 40s. Howard was in his 40s. The Edge was an 18 to 34 radio station. We thought, you know, talk about evolution. It might be a good way to evolve, do some talk radio for a little bit older audience. But the whole project went in the crapper pretty soon. So since then, we've sort of found ourselves, you know,
adrift.
But, you know, yeah, well, you know, listen, we have had an interesting career. And now, like you, Kelly Alexander,
we're heard around the planet. We have listeners in the UK, Hong Kong, Australia, the US, Canada, that listen to us on our podcast. And as far as evolving goes, this podcast is kind of a radio show we never got to do. And I'm not just talking about the freedom to express ourselves in any way we want. It's also just the freedom to talk and ruminate daily on things that are of interest to us that we know will be of some interest to others.
Now, do you find that doing the podcast, you have changed how you are as broadcasters? Like, have you opened things up a little bit more because you don't have maybe the time constraints of being on traditional radio?
Yes. I mean, we're doing the thing, we're doing on a podcast what we always wanted to do on terrestrial radio, but for several reasons, we're never able to do, be it programming, a program director, time restrictions, you know, playing a lot more music, obviously, commercial load. So you know, with podcasting, we're just, if we want to go an hour 20 one day, fine. And if the next day we want to go an hour 40, fine. Or if we want to go shorter than that, we can. So it's, yeah, it's changed. Sure, it's changed our strategy and how you attack a show, but it's a lot more fun, I'll tell you.
And can you actually give us an idea about how much work or just maybe some of the challenges that you had to go through to launch a podcast? Because I know what I went through. And I mean, looking back, I'm happy I went through it. I think I grew as a broadcaster. But I think some people just think, oh, you're sitting down and you just turn on the mic. But I don't think, you know, I know from experience that's not how it is.
Well, you know, some of the challenges, the things that we, you know, met along the way were everything from, you know, setting up a studio ourselves to, you know, promoting it ourselves to deciding to do it every day. A lot of people, you know, for whatever reason, doing a daily podcast is a big commitment. It's a big commitment, especially in the absence of, you know, a lot of income. It's a big commitment to do the product and make it sort of somewhat interesting every day. And, you know, we just decided early on that we would try and treat it like it was our radio show. We did that every day, and we decided we would try and do this every day. You know, I mean, all the regular things, would anyone listen to it? We have a lot of brand equity in Toronto, but one of the challenges we still face is, you know, running into people, as I did 2 days ago, that loved me and Fred on the radio and have no idea we're doing this podcast. I met a woman at an event I was hosting on Sunday whose eyes lit up when she found out that she could listen to us as simply as going to her computer. I didn't tell you about this. Mm-hmm. I met this woman. She was a longtime fan of ours, and she was sort of sad when she met me. She was like, oh, Howard, I really miss you and Fred, and it's been so long since, you know, I got a chance to listen to you. I said, well, you can listen to us tomorrow. And that's, I'm sure you find the same thing with your podcast. A lot of people don't get, for some reason, how easy it is to access content like this on their computers because they haven't been educated to the idea that the content that they're used to getting on the radio is now available at a couple of mouse clicks.
Right. Yeah, I actually had that experience just this past weekend with a similar experience where the lady was like, you know, I wish I could hear you more. And I was like, well, you can. And she was like, oh, wow. So it's interesting to sort of have to educate them. But I want to make sure I mention, you know, your website, where people can find you, humbleandfredradio.com. They should also be finding you on Twitter at humblefredradio. And, you know, because you guys are now business owners, I guess, you know, running this podcast and having the support crew that you have, when you look back on your radio career, is it interesting to know that, you know, later on in your career, right now, you've had to take on all this responsibility as opposed to just, you know, having the responsibility of just putting on a great show. You have all these extra things to deal with now.
Well, we do have extra things to deal with. We're pretty lucky. We have a lot of people surrounding us that have volunteered, that have come on board with an idea to be part of this, should it ever actually, you know, make money. Yeah, I mean, there isn't just the show to do, although it takes a good bit of our energy every day, but we're also the sales manager, the program directors, we're the promoters of it. But it's, having said that, it's amazing. Once we start the show, all that stuff is pushed out of our minds because I just think we enjoy doing radio or podcasting or just yapping into a microphone. So, you know, all that stuff that surrounds it is, I don't know. Once we start doing it, I just don't, it feels no different to me.
And is it,
you know,
a lot of
carrying weight or pressure that you did before? I mean, I'm speaking for myself here, but.
And is it a lot of fun for you to, you know, because you have X amount of time that you are filling for the show, do you enjoy crafting, like, how the show is going to go? I mean, I know, I'm sure a lot of it is organic and you just sort of flow through your topics and stuff, but is it fun for you to go and figure out which guests you want to have and which direction the show is heading as you move forward in your, you know, online career?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know. How would you answer that? The thing is, we have an act. I mean, seriously, we have an act. We have a thing we do, whatever that thing is or how it would be described. And, you know, it's developed over a couple of decades now, so we just do it.
Okay.
The thing is, we don't often share a lot with each other before a show either.
Okay.
Well, because we know how the other person's going to react, and if we shared it sometimes prior to the show, it wouldn't have the impact it does during the show.
Right. And what would you say to, you know,
that's how we craft the show.
Right. And what would you
say? We both have, and we'll talk about a couple things, like, you know, do you want to hit on this topic or that topic? But for the most part, Fred's right. We And we try and keep things as organic as possible. I know that I'll say some things that he might find amusing, or he'll have a take on it, or vice versa. He might just say something to get my reaction and know that I'll have a reaction. Or sometimes, once in a while, I'll say, listen, I'm going to bring this thing up. Let me go for a second or two because I want to get this point across before you jump on it. But, we've been broadcasting together for a long time. It is fairly natural at this point. Although there's always, I always find some things every day or every so often that still surprise me. And that's part of the joy of it, that I'll be surprised by something he says.
Do you enjoy, with regards to the fact that you're online now and you don't have the constraints that you might have when you were on terrestrial radio with, maybe such things as cursing and all that sort of stuff? Do you like having that freedom where you can maybe bring up a topic that, in your previous life as radio broadcasters, your program director might have had a heart attack?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I don't know. We worked for a new rock station, The Edge, and the reason they called it The Edge is because we were edgier than most radio stations. So from that standpoint, we had a lot of freedom at The Edge. And then when we moved over to Mojo Radio with talk radio for guys, we had a lot of freedom there. It wasn't until we got into a more of a sort of a mainstream situation when we worked at The Mix that there were some of those issues. But really, no, generally speaking, outside of the swearing, of which we don't do a lot of, we do some on the podcast because we just talk like we normally would to each other, off air. Mm-hmm. Just on the podcast, you don't have to be that concerned. So, I don't think as far as our content goes, though, we're still talking about the same goofy stuff we've always talked about.
And what has the response been from your fans who now have found you online? Has it, obviously they're ardent listeners for them to follow you over to online broadcasting?
I think the response has been a deep and joy that they receive from our silly content every day. The response has been great. Anyone that has found us after either being a fan from before or a fan now seems to like this form of our show the best. They say that a podcast listener is worth, some people say 13 times that of a radio listener. I'm not sure if you've ever heard that, Kelly. And the reason they say that is because the simple act of having to go and get you to go somewhere, to make a little bit of an effort, even though we all know it's not much of an effort, mm-hmm. It's a psychological thing that if they invest the little effort that it takes in seeking you out versus just turning on a radio and banging around some buttons, they tend to respond in a way that I'm going to use the word deeper, in a deeper nature than they did when we were just radio guys.
Okay. And, for some of your former colleagues that you may have worked with at, your terrestrial radio stations who might not be in the business anymore or who are maybe even still in the business but want to sort of update their careers and refresh them a little, what would you say to them if they decided that they wanted to do what you're doing and what I'm doing being online?
Get off your ass. it's interesting. Since we've been doing this, how many former radio people or people not in the business say, I've really been thinking about doing that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do that. And they ask questions, but they don't do it.
Right.
And that's the thing. Howard and I, from the beginning, right back to last August or July or whatever it was, we decided to do it, and we moved forward immediately. Bought equipment, found a studio, did what we had to for the studio, set the sort of, the foundation of what we needed going forward, educated ourselves. And then on October 15th, started doing a show every day. Treat it like a job. So that's what I would tell anybody. Stop talking about it and just do it. It's not going to happen magically. Mm-hmm. And it's going to cost you a little bit of, as businesses go, it costs virtually nothing. Yet at the same time, when you tell some people you might have to invest $2,000 or $3,000, it's like, oh, geez, really? Like, that's an issue?
Right.
I mean, seriously.
It's not so much the investment in money. It's the investment in, a lot of people, comedians, radio people. The podcast is going to be one of those things. You think a bunch of people are doing them now. In the next couple of years, everybody's going to have a podcast. The difference is, the people that can fill content requirements are just as few as there are. The people that can fill and make a radio show happen like yours or ours, it won't be any different on a podcast. The difference is you know, we're all going to be sort of ahead of the curve here a little bit. But the real barrier to entry is what Fred said. Most people would say, I'd like to do that, and they do one or two, or they might try it for a couple months, and then you just don't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I found that too, where to make that commitment and to keep going, a lot of people are shocked about the amount of effort that you have to put in to keep going and to keep getting better and to keep bringing in the listeners.
And you know what the funny thing is, too? I keep saying the funny thing. None of it's really funny.
Nothing funny, too.
Trust me. It's that age-old thing where, you know, when Howard often mentions this when it comes to stand-up comedy, everybody thinks they can do it until they have to. Like, there's a lot of radio announcers out there. They're very good. They had great careers, find themselves at work. They can't do a podcast. They can't sit down for an hour and a half and talk. They just can't. Their whole career was talking in 20 and 30-second bites, off and off liners or, you know, contests and stuff like that. It's not easy. So I think that intimidates a lot of people as well, especially if you're doing it every day. Like, we come up with 90 minutes of content every day. Not to mention the terrestrial show that we're doing it on K-Rock in Kingston.
I actually wanted to ask you about that. You know, going back and doing radio, would you guys go back to doing it full-time?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we're doing it now. Filling in for Rogers in Kingston. We do a three-hour radio show. We play six songs an hour. We talk for 4 or 5 minutes at a time. And, you know, I mean, if the gig was right and we had a chance to do it again in a major market for the right kind of feel, absolutely, we do it again. One thing we won't stop doing, though, Kelly, we'll still do the podcast.
Good, that was
because
my second question.
The podcast is, you know, what do you call it? Fred had a phrase for it. One is the art and one is the business. Or was the one is the art and one is the, what did you say?
I forget. When did I say that?
A couple months ago.
Oh, did I? Hold on, it was a couple of months ago? I don't know, I'll have to look at my notes.
One's the job and, that was it. One's the job and one's the art. And
right.
As much as we love doing the podcast, it really is the art. The idea of doing another major market morning show would be the job. It would be a great job, but it would certainly help offset the fact that the podcast is, you know, it's a tough thing to monetize.
Right, right. And what can we actually expect from HumbleAndFredRadio.com in the next couple of months? Like, are there plans to expand, to maybe add more shows to, like, I don't know, creating a network? Like, your fans, like, what can they expect to hear from you? And new fans that, you know, we want to help help bring more attention to you.
Well, we've started a network, just added another show today, the Jeff Leeson Show. We have the Mike and Kaz Show. We have Warren Anderson and Allison Dore, two comics, do a show on a daily basis, part of our network. They're all falling under the Hummel and Fred umbrella. And we do an intern show. The interns that work on our show, they do their own show. We post it on iTunes and on the website. So, yeah, we're offering quite the menu of shows at this point. So that's where we're headed. It's the Hummel and Fred Radio Network, HummelandFredRadio.com network.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, because, you know, everybody's got their own show, but it all leads back to Humble and Fred and vice versa, right?
That's fantastic. And, again, do you have any sort of parting words of advice or just thoughts about anyone who might be listening right now around the world who, you know, again, is thinking of dipping their toe into online broadcasting?
I've said that. Just do it. Just stop talking about it. And you have to be serious about it. You have to look at it like it's a job. Listen, if you want to do it for recreation or fun or a pastime or a hobby, super. But, I mean, if you're looking at it to maybe be your job, you've got to treat it like a job. It's that simple from my perspective. I now defer to Howard.
I don't have really any advice. I think that, you know, it isn't something that, I mean, not everyone's supposed to be doing everything. If you're a broadcaster, then that's different. I would just echo what Fred said. If you're a broadcaster and you think that you can occupy somebody's time for 45 minutes or an hour every day or every so often, then great, give it a shot. It really is. I mean, it isn't very expensive to get it started. And there's a lot of people doing it for a lot less money than we did it. We created our podcast to sound like a radio show. And so it has radio studio quality, but it doesn't necessarily have to have that.
Okay. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It's been really fascinating to talk to you.
Kelly Alexander.
That's Humble Howard and Fred Patterson of HumbleAndFredRadio.com. Make sure to follow them on Twitter at HumbleFredRadio.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is the one and only Victoria Duffield. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your career. Did you know since you were like teeny tiny that you wanted to be an entertainer?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds funny, but it really was. It's always been in my blood. It's always been something I wanted to do. I mean, I would take advantage of any family member, any relative that came over to the house. My mom would say, then it would be, okay, showtime. Mommy, when's showtime? And I'd have everybody sit on the couch and I would perform for them. I'd dance, I'd sing. I had this like little microphone stand, I remember when I was younger, it was like plastic, but it worked, and like you could like turn a button on and it would like amplify your voice, which I thought was the coolest thing ever. I felt like Britney Spears. So yeah, it's always been something I'd love to do. I mean, starting off with dance class and then moving into performing with singing. So it's always been something I've loved, and I've never really had an issue getting up in front of people. And that's why like public speaking in English class was always like, oh, it's public speaking time? Yes, like that's so awesome. It's so much time is spent on it, and for me, it's not even a thought of getting in front of people.
And what is a big memory for you where you knew that you were starting to make it as a professional career?
Well, I mean, performing around like Abbotsford, my hometown, there would be like the occasional person who would recognize me places, but not very much. So once I was on like the Next Star and people kind of saw me in a different light where I was someone on television, it kind of from there, after that, just having people sort of come up to me around places or going through the mall and people following me and asking for pictures, it's like, all right, I think something's kind of happening now. People know who I am, and it was always very exciting. And I was when I was younger, I practiced my autograph as soon as I could start to write my name. Like, as soon as I knew how to write, I took all these pieces of paper and I wrote my name, and I drew like a flower or a rainbow, and I would hand them out to people who came to the door, or I'd walk with my mom's places and I'd hand them out to people on the street and say, this is my autograph for when I'm famous someday. My mom thought it was hilarious. She's like, I don't even know what she's going to be famous for, but apparently she wants to do something. So yeah, it's always been something I've enjoyed. So now, I mean, signing my autograph so many times, it's I do still think of that, of how much I've been waiting for this moment.
Now, your career has obviously started to really kickstart and it's going now. Can you look back and say that there's a moment right now that you can't believe that you've actually got to do this?
Well, for me, a huge moment was performing in Rogers Arena in Vancouver. I mean, it was great performing all the huge stadiums with the Big Time Rush Cody Simpson tour in September. For me, I mean, I've seen Britney Spears at Rogers Arena. I've seen Madonna. I've seen all these amazing artists. So for me to know that I was performing there was a huge thing for me to just kind of grasp and sort of get the concept of, wow, I'm the same stadium I'm performing in. So that's definitely something that impacted me a lot.
Now, you brought up Britney Spears, and I've said this when I've introduced you before, that you really seem to embody her. Not that you're emulating her, but you really have that touch and that feel. What do you feel when people say, oh my God, like she has this Britney Spears-esque going on?
I'm absolutely flattered. I love hearing that. She was someone I looked up to so much when I was younger, and I had this called a VHS. Yes, mm-hmm. Okay. Shows them the era we're in now. A VHS of her tour in Hawaii, and it just kind of showed what I like to it. It showed her as a normal person and just her sort of having fun with her dancers and surprising. It was like this whole video they made of her surprising fans and rehearsing and then performing, and I would just study it and just watch it all the time, and I still know all the words to her first album. I listen to it so much, even when I'm playing the song now, I'm like, why do I still know these words? So, I mean, she was just someone who I looked up to so much, and I still love her as an artist and just think she's so amazing, just her star quality she has. So for someone to say that I sort of have the same kind of spark as her, I think is really cool. I've captured it. I'm excited.
Tell us about your album, Shut Up and Dance. It's been doing extremely well. You've had so many great singles off that. Can you tell us what the album means to you and what you want your fans and your evolving fans, because you're getting more as you cross the country and make new fans. So what do you want them to take away from it?
I think the main thing we wanted to release Shut Up and Dance first was just to kind of get across that I'm a dance artist. So I think with this album, just sort of getting to know me as a pop dance performer and so great to have the album out and for everyone in Canada to hear, and looking forward to other countries hearing my music hopefully soon too. And I'm going to be hopefully getting back into writing for my next album too, and kind of seeing what take I want to go on it. I still do like dance pop music, but I mean, there's still so many so many sides you can take of that. So I'll kind of see what I'm influenced by and take it from there.
What do your fans mean to you?
They mean everything. I couldn't do this without fans, and they support me, they inspire me, they encourage me, and they make me love what I do even more. I mean, I'm a person who loves working hard and love performing, but I couldn't perform without my fans. There's, you know, it would be different performing in the theater with nobody in it than performing it with people, you know, cheering for me. So they're everything. I couldn't do this without them, and you can't be an artist, you can't be a performer without people that like you and like your music. So they're a huge part of it, and they make everything happen, and they're the people that buy your music and are the reason why I do this. So I mean, I'm so thankful for all the fans that I have in Canada and just all the support they've given. I think it's cool how fast it all kind of happened. I thought my first single would kind of come out and it would kind of be like almost wasted per se, and then the second single would be when people start to realize who I am. So I was surprised for my first single for people to have caught on to me and as an artist and like me so soon, which I think, I mean, I just think it's so funny. Like, for me, I would fangirl over like Britney Spears, and for people like fangirling per se over me, I think like, really, me? That's so cool.
And how do you feel about social media? Because this is a way that couldn't be done in the past, where you can actually connect so directly to your fans via Twitter and Facebook.
I love it. Yeah, I'm so thankful that I'm kind of in a time where that's so big and you can do that. It would just be so different. It must have been, I don't know, I mean, I guess they would connect with people at their shows and stuff. So I think this is great, not only to let them know for upcoming shows or stuff going on, but to just talk, say something back to them. If they say, you know, great job, I'll, as much as I can, I'll try to reply and say thank you for coming, and I remember meeting you, you were wearing this or whatever. So I think it's great with that personal connection, immediate response that you can do, and I just think that's great.
Now I have to ask you about this, because we have Cody Simpson fans that listen to our show, because we've had Cody on our show. So we have some Simpsonizers that listen. So you got to do a duet with him, and you also got to do a spoof video of Gangnam Style. So you need to tell me about the duet first, and then what it was like to do the spoof video.
Yes, really cool. I was really excited when I sort of, it all came together that he was featuring on They Don't Know About Us, and being able to shoot the music video together. We got to, spend some time together and get to know him, and he's a really funny guy. He's really, really nice, really, really humble, down to earth, and also very hardworking. So we're actually quite similar, because there's times where we're having fun and joking around, and then there's times when, we got to focus and let's get this done. And just throughout the day, funny things, like my shoe broke at one point, so we had to get upstairs, so he gave me a piggyback upstairs, or just different funny things. He's really cool, and he's really, really sweet with his fans, too. It's always something that's neat to see, is how much he really cares for them.
Now, something I've noticed with both you and Cody is the fact that you have a lot of family support. Can you talk to me about the way, I always notice your mom is with you. What does it mean to have your family behind you as you try to forge this, pop dance career, not only in Canada, but around the world?
It means a lot. I've always had really great support from my family. I mean, it would be really hard to have gotten this far without their support. And my dad, financially supporting me from all my dance class when I was younger. I mean, dance isn't, it's not cheap to be a dancer. So, it costs a lot of money for all the dance classes and costumes and dance competitions, and my mom always being there to help, and she was always the mom backstage to, oh, I have that, or oh my gosh, I need this. Oh, guess what? That's in my bag too. So it's great, and her traveling with me all the time, and she keeps me organized, and like, oh, I can't believe I forgot this. I grabbed it for you. It always happens. Like, it's great, and I also have great support for my brothers too, and I look forward to seeing them when I get home from being on the road, and so it's good. And also having my mom with me keeps homesickness is a little less, because I can talk to my dad on Skype and see my mom all the time.
Now I want to ask you this as well. You mentioned Britney before being an influence. Who else is an influence musically for you? Especially, I'm wondering, because you are a dance artist, like, do you look up to like some old school people? Let's say like a Janet Jackson or a Whitney Houston.
Yep, Janet Jackson, Michael Jackson, people that I've looked up to too. I have like Janet Jackson like tapes of her concerts and stuff, and I'll study them and just like their different moves. I've seen Janet Jackson and also live in concert too. I've seen Britney Spears, Janet Jackson, and Madonna, which I think is very cool, because those are all the people that kind of do what I want to do, and so it's great just watching them and seeing how they handle their audience and just picking up tips. I'm always one to be hungry to learn more and to improve, so those are definitely people that I've looked up to, and I hope to kind of go in their same kind of path.
Are you your biggest critic?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think you can move past that and pat yourself on the back eventually?
I mean, I mean, just certain times I will feel proud, obviously, of different things, and I feel proud of all the writing I was able to do on my album, or just different shows that I thought, okay, that went well. But there's always something that I, you know, this could have been better. Or listening back, I go, oh my goodness, like, oh, I should fix that. But I mean, I think it's something that's it's good about me, is there's always going to be a time where I want to do more, I want to get better, and I think that's the only way to kind of evolve as an artist and to keep changing, is to always want to have things you want to fix and get better at.
And what can we look forward to with Victoria Duffield in 2013?
A new album. I haven't started the writing for it yet, so figuring out what that's going to be. More performances. I hope to go on a couple more tours. And, lots more music and lots more to share with my fans.
Now, last question. We are broadcast around the world online. We're also on 4 radio stations in Japan and Australia and Malaysia and Singapore. So you have fans that are now going to be listening to you around the world. What do you say to your global fans?
Thank you. Unfortunately, my music is only kind of in Canada. I'm only performing in Canada so far, but hopefully that's not for long. Really excited to open up internationally in 2013, hopefully, and get out there. I already see some amazing support around the world on Twitter, so I thank you for that, and it doesn't go unnoticed, and you know, love you guys too, and I can't wait to show that and get my music there for you and to perform for you too.
Fantastic. Victoria, thank you so much for joining us on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you very much.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Here we are, right back at the start. You put your hand on my heart, and you ask me to take you back once again. I don't care, 'cause my heart's on the dance floor, and I don't wanna hear you talk anymore. Don't talk anymore. If you wanna get up and dance with me tonight, baby, don't say you're sorry. If you wanna take me away tonight. I don't wanna hear you say to me that you were wrong to cut and run. Can't this wait until the morning comes? If you wanna get up and dance with me tonight, shut up and dance, get up and dance if you want me.
Yeah. on when you head out on a date. You want to make sure you look nice, that you don't get lost on the way to the restaurant or the bar, and that you keep your nerves in check. On top of all of that, you need to make sure you're following some important rules of etiquette. To help us understand what rules to pay attention to is Toronto-based etiquette columnist, advisor, and blogger with SheDoesTheCity.com, Karen Cleveland. Karen, welcome back to The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Happy to have you back. And right off the hop, what would you consider to be some great first date ideas when it comes to etiquette?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. Well, I think mapping out where you want to go and what you want to do is always an excellent place to start. There's nothing worse than that back and forth, like sort of waiting for one person to take the lead on it. So I'm of the mind that whoever has done the asking, it's a good idea to come to the table with some ideas of what you want to do and propose that. And some basic things to keep in mind. So if you're planning on going to a real hot spot, good on you, it would probably impress your date. Make sure to get there really early to nab a table. I don't know about you, but Toronto is plagued with many lovely restaurants here who don't take reservations. So getting there early, figuring out where you need to park, all those things to ensuring you get a table is an excellent idea.
Can I sidebar you for just a second with regards to the hot spot? Here's my question. I guess you should not overcompensate, meaning like, ooh, I got us into this hot place when, ooh, I didn't. You know what I mean? That's bad etiquette, I would assume, if your date's standing at the door and you can't get them in.
Yeah, I mean, it's risky. It's a gamble. But I think it depends on the vibe, too. Like, if it's a really fun place that is perfect, you know, and perfectly conducive to a first date, I say go for it if it's somewhere that you're pretty bent on. But, you know, you want to get there early and nab that table so your date's not awkwardly waiting with you for a 45-minute wait.
Gotcha. Perfect.
Or pick a spot that doesn't require that, you know, grief and takes a reservation and just, you know, sort out your night that way.
Fantastic. Now, a question for you. If you're on the receiving end of the person coming up with the ideas, what's the etiquette on that? Like, do you go with one of the three choices that they've proposed, or do you, you know, be annoying and be like, well, I really want to go over here?
You can do whatever you like, and it might determine if you get asked for a second date.
This
I would
is true.
Think if someone comes... is ask you out and they come to you with three, you know, what they think are probably really cool ideas for a date, you know, it might be nice to accept them. It's not, you know, it's not a short list of proposals that you can send them back to the drawing board. At least it shouldn't be.
Okay.
If it is, then Godspeed on your first date. It might not go very well.
It's just because I feel like sometimes, you know, your nerves might get the best of you. And let's say they've proposed three things that either A, you don't know any of those places and you feel like you're going to be nervous going into a new environment, that you might be like, can we go to McDonald's, you know? Okay.
Yeah. I have one friend who's probably the least outdoorsy person I know, but a really, really handsome guy asked her to go on a kayaking date. And it couldn't have went worse, actually. But they're actually been together for a couple of years now, so it's a lovely story. But she absolutely accepted a date totally outside of her comfort zone.
Good
for
her.
So who knows?
It works out. Okay. Now, is it ever okay to go Dutch when you're going out on a date? And how do you navigate that? Because I know that can be awkward.
I think so. I think it's perfectly okay to go Dutch. It's a really personal thing, but when the bill hits the table, I don't care how well that date is going, it can always be a little bit awkward. There might be some presumptions or some assumptions, rather, about who's going to be picking up that tab. So some people prefer to split it down the middle. Others subscribe to the idea that whoever did the asking on the date or the inviting picks up the bill. Other people think that the gentleman still picks up the tab on the first date. To each their own. I'm not here to advise on that. But what I will advise on is definitely avoiding that long out, that drawn out exchange of, I'll get it. No, I'll get it. I insist. No, I'll get it. It's so awkward. If someone insists on picking up the tab, thank them and let them. And then from there, if the date's going really well, you could offer to pick up drinks at the next spot or pick up the tab for the next date.
Gotcha. Okay, that's perfect. Now, what would you deem to be inappropriate when you are out on a date?
Inappropriate or what is appropriate? I guess either.
Yeah, we'll start. You can start with one and then go to the other.
I think phones away is really important. It's a common habit now that we always have our BlackBerry or iPhone wired to our hand. And if you're having dinner, you know, with friends that you see a couple times a week, that's one thing, even though I still have some mixed feelings about that. But dates, having your phone out sends a message to the person that you're sitting across from that whatever you're either waiting for on the other end of that phone or that might happen is more interesting than them. And it's really harsh. So I think diplomacy has to supersede, you know, emotions of how well the date's going. And even if it's not going so well, it's just kind of rude to have your attention more to your phone than your company. So phones away, absolutely.
Perfect. And then what else is inappropriate?
a little presumptuous to assume that meals are shared. There's two types of people in this world, I think, people that are really comfortable sharing their food and people that aren't. So you probably want to, you know, really get a gauge on that before you tuck into your date's meal without an explicit invitation to try their dinner. So I wouldn't be too presumptuous with that. And then, of course, table manners are so underrated. So, you know, knowing where that napkin goes throughout the meal and holding doors for each other, those nuances are, you know, they're dated and they're certainly longstanding. I never tire them.
Okay. Now, I wanted to ask as well, you know, especially if it is first date and there's all of that pressure going on, even though I know you shouldn't feel the pressure, what topics do you stay away from?
Yeah, conversation starters for sure. Well, I think a good place to always start is how you met. So if it was a mutual friend that introduced you, to maybe chat about how they met that person, or if you met, I don't know, if your professional ties, how they got to that place. But when early days, it's easy to stick to things that you're really excited about and that don't isolate the other person. So what I mean by that, Kelly, is if you talk about nonstop about your friends or people that your date doesn't really know, they can't appreciate your stories. So maybe you stick to accessible topics like travel, what you do in your free time, your favorite places to eat and drink, what you're reading, a great movie you saw. And those are pretty accessible, democratic topics mm-hmm. that two people can participate in. Otherwise, conversation can get a little one-sided.
Right. And also, I'm assuming, especially right now, and I know we're in Canada, but obviously the show is around the world. And no matter where you live right now in the world, the hot topic is obviously the U.S. presidential race. So I'm assuming that is something to stay away from, unless it's just sort of on the surface-y.
I suppose you probably don't. I mean, I don't know if first date is the best place to be getting into any heated political debates. I certainly wouldn't shy away from controversial topics, but I wouldn't be the first to broach them.
Gotcha.
I like to stick to the standard get to know you fare and then, you know, test their mettle as a debater later in the dating process.
On date two. Okay. Joining us on the show is etiquette expert, advisor, and blogger with SheDoesTheCity.com, Karen Cleveland. Make sure to check her out on Twitter at school finishing. How do you avoid the awkward silences or, you know, fill them?
Yeah, that happens in every conversation. You must deal with a lot of that in your line of work.
Exactly.
Those awkward silences. I'm a really chatty person, Kelly, so I can talk the legs off a table. But not everyone is that communicative. So I think it's always good to have a couple topics up your sleeve that you're comfortable speaking to. Bad conversation or slow conversation, that's inevitable. And those things might be good cues to indicate how well the date's going. I wouldn't read too far into it. But if you need sort of a life preserver to pull you out of that awkward thing, I mean, I always try and brush up on the day's news at the very least. So I've combed the headlines so I know what's going on with pop culture or the day's events. Those are always pretty safe bets.
When it comes to, and we're going to sort of go on either side of the gender lines here, what do you think women are looking for, you know, while on that one, two, or third date?
Oh, my goodness. That's a really great question. I think, I don't believe in essentialism, so I don't think all women are looking for something and all men are looking, you know, for X or Y. But I do think that all people generally want to feel that the person they're with values their time. They want to feel respected. They want to feel like the other person is interested in them. And I think those are good, safe barometers. And you can't force those things. And we're talking dating here, not forging a professional relationship or a friendship. So chemistry is also really, really important if you're feeling that person.
Okay. Yeah, that's, I think that's very important. And I think you need to be aware of those markers, like as you're, you know, not to be too, you know, hypervigilant, but, you know, to sort of be present. And I think that's another thing, right, to make sure you're present in the date.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. Absolutely. And that harkens back to my earlier point about not having your phone out, like be there, be present and be into what the person's saying and get to know them. And if a date's a bust and you're not failing another date, at the very least, then you made, you know, a new friend.
And how do you actually handle that? Because that's where I would be super awkward. Like, that is where I am not good at getting out of things. Like, you know, I always feel like I'm, you know, I don't want to let the person down or whatever. So how do you, if you know it's not going anywhere, like how do you, I suppose if you're both don't feel it's going anywhere, then that's not that awkward. Then you're like, you know, it was really nice. Have a nice night, you know, but
mm-hmm.
if you can tell, like, maybe, you know, either dude is into this or, you know, or she's into it and you're not, like, how do you back out of that one?
I wish there was a simple answer. Sometimes you're the punchline, and sometimes you get to tell the joke.
Yes.
It happens. And sometimes we just don't click, and that's okay. I think we sort of beat ourselves up over that, and there's an entire genre of comedy around that, and it's tough. But I think being honest and upfront and not stringing a person along is maybe the best way to go about it. And sometimes it takes a little bit of time to figure out how we feel about a person. You might not know that. Maybe it's an instinctual gut reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But no one, I think, wants to be strung along. So I always think the best place to begin is how do you want to be treated if you were on the other end of that. And if a person was upfront and candid, forthright and respectful, I don't think you can ever go wrong there.
Okay. Now, I'm going to throw you for a bit of a loop, I think, but maybe not, because I know that you can handle this.
Ooh.
I feel like this is at the upper echelons of the etiquette spectrum. So what happens if date has gone well? What happens with the sexual aspect? Like, let's say that could be an option, like sex on the first date.
Yeah, I'd be punching well above my weight as an etiquette columnist if I was telling people they should or should not sleep with someone on the first date, presuming that everyone's responsible and adults and safe about it and is in a responsible mindset.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think chemistry can be a really powerful thing, for sure.
Okay, fantastic. Now, this is something else I wanted to broach on because I know that so many of us have gotten involved in this where we have helped hook someone up with someone else. And then, you know, so there's etiquette about that, meaning like, you know, let's say it didn't go well. Like, how do you handle that as friends? So how do you handle that if like you've set up, you know, Susie and Susie, it was a disaster for Susie?
It's a good litmus test of how well you know your friends,
okay,
isn't it? Like if you set them up with someone and you're sure it's going to go well, and it goes down in a blaze of glory, or the opposite, maybe introduce two people and you're really surprised they get on. Who knows? Like, relationships always look so different from the outside than they are from the inside. So if you're bold enough to set up two friends, I think it's important to recognize the implications around that, though. So if you set up two people in your immediate social circle and things go sideways, that's going to affect the friend dynamic between everybody. So it's just something to be mindful of.
Okay.
But if, say, you know, Susie didn't get on with the date that you set her up on, and she's wondering, what does this mean for her? I think, again, honesty is the best policy, and maybe, you know, you explain a couple reasons why you thought they might hit it off or what they had in common. But I think that, you know, you don't really owe an explanation beyond that. You're not the town matchmaker.
Right.
You know, it's not your full-time job to employ your friend's love life. But I think it's, you know, pointing out the things that you maybe thought why they would get along well is a good place to start. And then, you know, get their feedback. And then vow to never set them up ever.
Right, exactly. And I wanted to ask, too, about, okay, so let, you know, let's say you did, you know, set up Susie with your friend, you know, Rob. How does that go after with the post-mortem? Like, maybe each of them are going to want a post-mortem with you. Like, how, like, etiquette comes into play there.
Yeah, that's really precarious territory. Because if you have two friends who had a horrible date with each other and they're both venting to you, it's not good. So either be upfront where your allegiances lie. So Rob, you know, I'm sorry you had a really crummy date with Susie, but I gotta let you know my allegiances are with her in this. She's my oldest, dearest friend, or she's my sister, as you can appreciate, something like that.
Okay.
But if you're equally close to both people, put an embargo on the conversation and just say, you know, you can speak to pretty much anybody but me about how terribly this date went, because I'm really close to the other person, and it would be unjust of me to hear that from you, and I'm promising the same to them, as you can appreciate, and just remove yourself from the situation entirely.
I think that's really fair, and I think that's something that you need to take to heart, like all of us that are listening, because it's so easy to get caught up and then turn it into the young and the restless, and we don't get paid enough to play that.
And how terrible if you were on the other side of that? Like, would you want, you know, a guy that you had a horrible date with talking to your friend about why he thought you were so lame? That'd be awful.
Yeah,
so
awful.
Avoid it altogether.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good. Now, before I let you go, what would be your, I guess, biggest piece of advice with regards to this, you know, situation with the first date and how to handle it and how to end it well, kind of thing?
Don't overthink it.
Okay.
Don't overthink it. If someone asks you out or you ask someone out and they accepted, they clearly want a bit of your time. They want a little bit of your time. So don't overthink it. Go on a date. See how it goes. Take it for what it is. I'm of the old adage that, like, people come into your life for all sorts of reasons. So maybe it's just to check out a great new restaurant. Maybe you meet a great friend. Maybe you end up introducing this person to their future husband or wife. Maybe, you know, maybe it goes splendidly. Who knows? But just relax. skating.
Gotcha. And relax, be present, have a good time.
Absolutely. We just found a way.
Fantastic. Okay, perfect. Karen, thank you so much for joining us again. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Kelly, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
That's etiquette expert, advisor, and blogger with SheDoesTheCity.com, Karen Cleland. Make sure you check her out on Twitter, at School Finishing.
Bring on the
Remix.
much for joining us this week as we took a look back at some of our favorite memories from the past year. I am so grateful to all of our guests for being so gracious with their time and knowledge, as well as to you for making the time to listen. Before I let you go, here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time from William Arthur Ward. 4 steps to achievement. Plan purposefully, prepare prayerfully, proceed positively, pursue persistently. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful week. Any comments or questions, Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. You and I'll talk soon.